right, guys, welcome back. We have another monumental episode today.
Yes. Put a lot of pressure on you.
Episode 12. First of all, thank you guys for your support. Our growth has been tremendous. You know, we're in the top 10% of all podcast audio in the world.
That's a fact.
After 12 weeks. So, you know, it's encouraging because, you know, the content that we're putting out is educational. So it's good to see people gravitating towards that.
Yeah.
So thank you guys for your support and keep spreading the word. It's all been organic and grassroots. So, you know, tell a friend to tell a friend. And yes, keep helping us grow, because the more we grow, the more information that we're going to give away.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. So before we start, you know, we have to touch on some very sad and tragic news that happened in our culture, in the world, with the passing of Nipsey Hussle. Yeah. And, you know, we've spoke about it before, and I posted it on page where Nipsey, we was like really our guy. Like, we really...
That was like, we made a list of people we want to meet, and we're doing the same work, and we're on the same path, and he was at the top of our list. And to see the news, what happened Sunday, was just, it hit hard.
Senseless act of violence that just affected so many different people. And as you said, I mean, Nipsey Hussle was somebody that we were pretty confident that we were going to get a conversation with him. We just, I just felt it, because that was his economic empowerment. Yeah. That's what he was about. Like, you know what I mean? So. Yeah, man, it's just a very tragic and sad situation. Like you said, senseless, a senseless act of violence.
Yeah, Nipsey, man, rest in peace, King. Sad loss for the world, for the culture. He was definitely out there doing what he had to do to empower us all. And now we just got to take that baton and continue to run with it.
Yeah, I think that was one of the most uplifting things I saw. It was like somebody had DM'd us, and it was like, Nipsey would be proud of y'all work. And I was like, wow. Because I didn't even speak to you the first beginning of the week. I just couldn't talk. I was just completely out of it. But when I read that, like, he would be proud of us, continue to work, and the marathon continues, I was like, let's do it. We're going
to
carry this.
The marathon continues for sure. So this show is actually dedicated to Nipsey. And
great.
One of the things that he was very passionate about, he was passionate about a lot of things, but economic development in his community, buying back his community, and investing in real estate. Like, he was big on real estate. He was on Forbes. Forbes covered him as far as his real estate deals. And he had just brought the strip mall in his neighborhood, actually, unfortunately, where he was murdered at. He brought that strip mall. And he was buying a bunch of stuff. He had a WeWork center. Mm-hmm. He had a STEM center for kids. Yeah. Bunch of different things. He was, you know, he had him and his business partner, David Gross. They were buying apartment complexes, all kinds of stuff. So, yes, this is the real estate edition, because real estate is very exciting, and it's very hot, and it's very, you know, it's in the news a lot right now, and it's good, but it's something that a lot of some people hear about, and they just think they're just going to get rich quick.
Absolutely.
And make $1 million without doing any work.
Yeah.
And it doesn't
put no money up.
It's crazy. It doesn't always work like that. So this is what we do in the show, is we educate. So what better way to educate than to bring an expert in the field on? So we have a very special guest today, Matt Garland, who is an all-star mortgage advisor. Matt just came off a tour. He's in the middle of tour, actually.
Absolutely.
He's in the middle of tour.
Quick break.
He's on DJ Envy's real estate tour. So if you're not familiar, DJ Envy is heavy in the real estate game, and he's traveling around the country putting on seminars to educate people on real estate investing. And he has a team of professionals that, you know, he has on his team, on his real estate team, if you ever go to one of his seminars. And one of the professionals is Matt.
Absolutely.
So Matt's a good guy. Matt, as I said, he's a mortgage advisor and just very knowledgeable about the real estate industry. So thank you for joining.
Welcome, man.
Listen, I appreciate the love. I appreciate the hospitality. Like you guys said, I'm on tour right now. It's been, we just came back from Miami.
What cities have you been to so far?
So far, New Jersey, New York, Atlantic City, Queens. We just came back from Miami.
Yeah.
Now we're heading to Detroit on 420. Then we got Atlanta, 427. Then we're back in New Jersey, 519. Then June, he didn't announce yet, so I'm not going to, you know. But we got something going on in June, July, August, you know. So we're just traveling around, and I'm probably going to put together my own workshop again, part two of the Generational Wealth Workshop. So in June, I'm working on those details now. So it's been busy, man. And on top of
touring. Thank you for taking your time out, man.
Yeah, nah, this is nothing, man. I love what you guys are doing. I'm excited to be a part of this. And listen, I'm humbled to be a part of this because you guys could have picked anybody, but you guys picked me. To come in and talk about a subject that I love. So I'm ready, man. Rest in peace to Nipsey again, man. We're going to dedicate this episode to him. And hopefully we make him proud with the information that we're going to give out to the people.
All right. So now we're going to go into an interesting story that's been in the news recently about 50 Cent.
Curtis Jackson.
Queens get the money.
Are you from Queens?
From Queens. Brooklyn and Queens, but I claim Queens.
Okay. Mm-hmm. 50. Yeah, 50 Cent. We like 50 Cent. He's actually, I think he's more entertaining as an entertainer at this point than a rapper.
Absolutely.
He's hilarious. He's actually hilarious.
He's actually really fucking funny.
We've been rapping for a long time.
But I mean, Get Rich or Die Trying, classic. Even before that, the mixtape era.
Mixtape era killed it.
Changed the game.
He changed the game with the mixtape era.
All right. So he brought a house. He brought Mike Tyson's house in 2000.
Can we even call it a house? We gotta call it a state.
That's a. I don't even know if you can call it a state. That's a compound.
Yeah. Okay. That's bad. There we go.
That's a compound.
I think it's the biggest state compound house on the East Coast.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yep.
It has 50 bedrooms and 19 bathrooms.
It's crazy.
And it's 50,000 square feet. Fitting.
50,000. So and the address was, I think,
50 like, something drive. 50
something drive.
So it's ironic.
It works.
So he brought it in 2003 for Mike Tyson's ex-wife for $4.1 million. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he turned it into, oh, man.
It was like a Playboy Mansion times 10.
Yes. Right? He put a stripper pole.
Stripper poles, club, studio.
A grothel.
You got to love it.
Yeah. He had a cathedral atrium in there. This it was ridiculous. Two basketball courts, a studio, like you said, a club. It was called Club.
Damn, it was right at the tip of my head.
Club 50, I think.
No. Something else.
It's all right. It was a club.
It was a club.
Yeah, the sound system cost $100,000. Yeah.
He went in.
He put $6 million into it.
Yeah.
In addition from the $4 million that he actually paid for it. So he's $10 million total.
$10 million.
Mm-hmm. And he realizes that I don't really want the house anymore. But the interesting thing about the house is that it's in Connecticut.
Yeah, Farmington, Connecticut.
It's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In like a middle-class neighborhood.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like five times bigger than any other house in the neighborhood.
It's bigger than most hotels.
It's bigger than five times bigger than probably any house on the East Coast.
So now he decides he wants to sell it. I think it's been on the market for like 10 years.
12 years.
2007. He decides to sell it. He puts it. He lists it for $18.5 million.
Yeah.
Try again. No, then nobody's buying it for $18.5 million. So he just recently sold it for $2 million.
Yeah, $2.9 million.
$2.9 million. Yeah. Man, so that's like a 79% loss.
The headline was like 84%
from the asking price.
From the asking price.
And like a 79% from total what he's all in.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy because it's like, hey, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, if you really think about it, especially in our area, $2.9 million is not a lot of money.
Yeah.
For 50 bedrooms and 19 bathrooms.
When you really think about it.
That's obtainable.
It's not too far fetched.
No, it's not.
You really got six bedroom homes going for that price.
It's crazy that it cost that much. And then it's also crazy that it depreciated that much. So like, what's the takeaway here? Like,
oh man, there's so many takeaways with this story, good and bad. You know, the first thing that stands out in my head being in the business is over improving a house for a neighborhood, right? You know, I do a lot of renovation loans. So what I try to tell people is don't create the white elephant in your neighborhood because you'll never get that money back. You'll actually lose. And I think this is a prime example of having that white elephant.
Yeah.
And over-improving.
You want to get a story on the white elephant?
Yeah.
So like the white elephant really, it was a gift that was given to a king or somebody of that stature or emperor. And it was a beautiful gift because it was rare. You could never find these things, right? But after he got it, he realized all the burdens that came along with it. What do you feed this thing? how do we make sure that it stays healthy?
Yeah.
And it just becomes something that is there that has no use.
Yeah.
So they, like, when they say white elephant in real estate, that's what they're talking about. Like, I remember in Rio, when they built the Summer Olympics, they were building all these stadiums. And it was like, what are we going to do after the Olympics leaves? We have a bunch of white elephants, all these stadiums, all this infrastructure, nothing to use it.
Nothing to use it for, right?
Greece, another example.
And that's kind of what happened in this situation, right? So that's the biggest takeaway that I got off of it being in the business is just don't overimprove the house, like, because you never know what the market is going to do. You know, when he made that $6 million investment of renovating the home, it probably was a great idea at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you purchase that type of home and you put in that type of money, no one at that time was really, if you was not in the market, you know, on Wall Street and really paying attention on the back end, which I'm not even going to get into, it's too complicated. But if you wasn't paying attention, you really didn't know. So at that time, it probably was a great idea, but time told that it wasn't a great idea. So that's one of the major things that I got out of it, that he took such a big loss that we see. But on paper, when it comes to tax strategies and everything like that, listen, 50 is smart.
Yeah.
You know, he donated the proceeds to charity, tax strategy, right?
Right.
Along with helping and doing what he has to do. So I'm sure over the last 12 years, he's been able to write off a lot of these losses and will continue to probably write off.
He wasn't even living at the residence.
Yeah.
And one of the things he was trying to do was make it part of his G-Unit Foundation where kids could go as a summer camp retreat. And I think, like, off camera, we were talking about, like, oh, so he probably didn't even buy this as Curtis Jackson.
Oh, definitely probably not, right? It probably was in one of his many businesses' names.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's when you see these headlines, right? It's eye-popping.
Right.
You know, 84% loss. But do we really know how much he really lost or did he really lose in this entire deal where you break down from a tax perspective too? But the one thing is for sure, he overinvested into the property. And there's no denying that, right? You know, you purchased it for 4.1, you put in 6, you sold it for 2.9. You lost. You took an L when it comes to that. But on paper, he probably didn't take as big of an L that the headlines and the papers are making it out to.
And you got
to
keep it classy too. It's like putting, it's like putting rims on a Rolls Royce. Like
something's just
you put a stripper. You can't put a stripper pole in Connecticut. I don't think there's too many people.
I mean, listen, I'm not even going to argue a stripper pole. You know, when you're in his lifestyle and his business.
No. You know, it's good for him, but if you ever thought about reselling
it. But that's you know, again, when you're renovating your home, you got to be careful of what you're putting in there because your taste may not be my taste.
The next, you got to think the person that's going to buy it next.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you always got to be thinking about that resell, resell. And maybe that's something that he never thought that he would ever sell the property. He probably thought he would always keep it, right?
When he was putting those murals up of himself.
When he was putting the murals up, doing everything that he did to the property, he probably never thought, like, I'm going to sell this in 10 years or 12 years. Probably thought it was going to be his compound forever, but, you know, life changes, right? And that's the most important thing about real estate is you never know. You know, life moves in whatever direction it needs to move in. The market doesn't care about your stripper poles.
No, I don't. But it really don't care.
The person who bought the compound, he said that he's going to invest money to, again, renovate it too, right?
Yeah. So I read that this morning, that he's going to invest millions of dollars into the property. So for me, this is an interesting
story. Just keep going.
This is like a never-ending story, I think, that we're going to be speaking about for years to come. Because who knows what type of foolery that he's going to do in the house.
There's something about that house. Because before Mike Tyson had it,
the gentleman who owned it,
I think he went to prison for fraud, right?
For fraud, yeah.
And then Mike Tyson, like, we probably should maybe just turn that into a motel.
Listen, at this point, it's probably fitting for a hotel.
Right, yeah. You know, but it's in, like, the middle. It's Farmington, Connecticut, which is, I mean, if you live in a tri-state, that's not close to here, which is probably why he wasn't staying there. Like, he's in New York, he's in L.A.
Yeah.
It's like a two-hour drive.
Yeah, it's not far.
You've ever driven through Connecticut, it's like...
Yeah.
Bro, you're looking at trees for hours.
Yeah. But I mean, 50 wasn't driving it. It was taking a helicopter.
Helicopter, right?
Like, so, you know, it's just a different lifestyle. But, you know, that house is definitely a white elephant, like you said. And that could be a lesson for anyone who's buying real estate.
Yeah.
Don't overimprove. Don't put too much money because you never know how the neighborhood is going to change in the next couple of years. So if anybody going to learn anything from this, that's what we need to learn from it. Don't overimprove your property.
Shout out to 50.
Shout out to 50.
Curtis. Shout out to 50. Shout
love
to
what he's doing with Power. Shout out and to everything. Power. Yeah, shout out.
He
to
got
50.
Some new. He got some new series that he.
That white elephant. I don't know if that actually. If there's a white elephant, like, is that just like one of those make believe stories though? Because I'm just thinking about it. What makes a white elephant harder to feed than a regular elephant?
No, because it's a rare. It's rare. No, look, it's like this. No, it was rare. So it was like it's like the unicorn theory. It's like, yo, do they eat the regular food? Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was under that premise. Like, how do I treat this?
So an albino elephant doesn't eat regular.
I don't know. I've never had one. I'm like, my thing is like, a white elephant doesn't even exist. It's a theoretical story.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm saying it's not a real story.
No.
I thought it was like a real story.
No. That's like a unicorn. We've never seen a unicorn, but like, how do you feed a unicorn?
Or Santa Claus. We've never seen Santa either.
Yeah.
Never came.
You thought like it was a proverb, like.
I thought it was a real story.
No.
Shout out to 50. Shout out to the white elephants in the world, man.
Shout out. Like, remember in Greece? Remember? Did you post that?
What
in Greece where they have like Athens? What it looks like now? They had the Olympics in 2010.
Oh no, I know that. Yeah, the Olympics.
Have you seen it? Yeah. What it looks like now? Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's crazy.
Completely run down.
Yeah,
they can't.
Waste of money.
Wasted money.
Yeah.
Just to have this one event. Like, these things are white out. Same thing's gonna happen in Rio. Like, some places should not have the Olympics.
They built a stadium in the rainforest.
Why?
It's crazy.
In Rio.
Why? And when they try to have events, it was crazy. The whole city flooded. Nobody can get to the events. It's like, all right, you spent $80 million to build this stadium, probably more. Now we have no use for it.
No use.
You can't even play. It's in the rainforest.
An abandoned stadium in the rainforest.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. They were like, oh, we'll have club teams come. But they a club team's not going. Some of these club teams can't put 100,000 people in there.
They can't
afford to go to the games. Look at the environment you built it in.
It's terrible, man.
Yeah.
But it is what it is.
Well, there you have it.
We're going to talk today about how to get in real estate 101. So for the average person that doesn't come from, you know, an affluent family and low socioeconomic environment, how does someone get into real estate? Like, what would be the first step?
Oh, man, the first step, personally, I think, is mindset. You got to make the decision.
Okay.
I think that's numero uno, right? But as far as financing, you need to get pre-approved. You need to know exactly what you can qualify for.
Okay.
There's several different loans out there. So let's speak to the first-time home buyer right now. What I try to coach all my first-time home buyers is, you know, most people want to go ahead and go to White Plains or go to Long Island, buy the nice single-family home with the white picket fence and this, that, and the third, right? Which is cool. If that's what you want to do, that's what you got to do what you got to do.
You got the money for it.
You got to have the money for it, though, right? But what I try to encourage all my first-time home buyers, if you don't have a need for a certain school district or if you don't have, you know, children that's going to junior high school or high school, then you should always start off with a multifamily, especially if you know you're looking to get into real estate investing, you know, at some point in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Start off with a multifamily, anywhere between 2 to 4 units, and you can use programs like FHA, which allows you to put down as little as 3.5% as a down payment.
Okay.
Which is a terrific program.
So 3.5 would be that's a pretty small percentage.
Yeah. So
as opposed to if I had to just outright put, like, what is it normally, 20% or
30%? No. So you have FHA that allows you to put down 3.5%.
Yeah.
And also conventional loans allow you to put down as less 3%, but you have to qualify. You have to be a certain income restrictions.
Okay.
If you're buying multifamilies, you have to, you know, White Plains, the income restriction is probably $96,000. So if you exceed that, then you won't qualify for that 3% down on a multifamily.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll probably have to put down as 15% because it's going to be a primary residence.
Right.
But FHA is always a good tool because no matter, it doesn't have any income restrictions. As long as you're within the county's loan limits, then you can, and you can credit an income qualifier, which minimum credit score is a 580 for FHA loans.
So
we're putting down as little as 3.5%. Buy that multifamily and you can live in it for 12 months and then move out of it.
Yeah.
And then you can rent the entire place out. And now you created a cash flow investment property for yourself. And now you can now go ahead and go buy your one family or your condo or whatever you want. And now put down minimum down payment as well.
So each county has its set loan limit. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So FHA has every county is different, right? So we're in like 5 boroughs, Westchester, Long Island.
Right.
So up to a four family, we can go up to 1.397 million.
Every county in America?
Every county in America. So if you're, you know, your audience is probably all over the place, yeah, right? So if you want to know what your county loan limit is, just you can Google it again. You know, if you live in Kentucky, you can Google, you know, FHA loan limits for Kentucky or whatever county is in Kentucky. Or if you're in Georgia, if you're in Gwinnett County, you can Google FHA loan limits for Gwinnett County, right? And they'll tell you. For one family, duplex, triplex, fourplex. That's what they call it down there. So that's why.
So that's interesting because, yeah, that's interesting that you say like your first home should be a multifamily.
It should be a multifamily. Absolutely.
Because a lot of people have the reverse mindset where they want to get the picket white fence as their first home. And then if they want to get like an investment property, then they'll look at multifamily.
Yeah, but see, that's where they screw themselves, right? Because now when you go ahead and you do that one family first and you go do the multifamily second, now you got to put down 25%. Mm-hmm. Now, unless you have 25% plus closing costs, which is probably you're going to probably spend around 30% for that transaction, then guess what? You just screwed yourself. Now it's gonna be harder for you to get into that investment game. Now if you go ahead and you buy that multifamily first using 3.5% plus your closing costs, now you have a multifamily. Potentially, you're gonna live in it because it has to be your primary residence.
Right.
And you have to live in it for 12 months.
Yeah.
Right. After 12 months, you can move out free and clear, no problem. Now go ahead and buy another one family property. And now still do a minimum down payment loan because you're moving out of one and moving into the other as your primary residence. So the key to anything is all on how you're structuring your loans and structuring your deal, right? And if once you say investment property, you automatically think 25% down payment. That's a huge difference. Yeah. Now, especially here where we are, you know, that can be a couple hundred grand depending on that sales price. But if you go ahead and do multifamily first, minimum down payment, 12 months, you move out, move into your single family. Now you have an asset that's going to pay for itself and probably pay for your one family or a portion of that one family, right? Now you created some sort of cash flow.
That's a massive
I've had clients move from a four family to a two family, you know, and still was able to use minimum down payments. Now, if you use an FHA loan, you can't go ahead and move out of that four family property FHA and then go into the two family FHA because FHA changed their rules a couple years ago. You can't have two FHA loans at the same time now, right?
So, but you could use it again, the FHA loan.
What I tell everybody is this, right? You buy that four family or that multifamily.
Okay.
You stay in it, you refinance it, you get out of the FHA loan and you go into a conventional mortgage, right? Probably try to pull some equity out of that home. So that way now you can use that equity as a down payment for your new property.
Okay.
Now you refinance it as a primary residence because you're still technically living in there.
Mm-hmm.
But your intent is obviously at some point to move out of it. Now you're taking that equity. You have a conventional loan on it now. Now you're going to buy your one family. Great. You're going to go move in that one family. Now you can use FHA for that one family because this four family or multifamily is now in a conventional mortgage and you took the equity out of there to help you purchase that one family. And now your tenants are not only paying for this property, now they're going to help pay for this property depending on the rentals and cash flow of that property.
That's
so valuable. It's all about strategy at the end of the day. Yeah, and most people don't lead with strategy. Most people lead with emotion.
Emotion, that's
and,
a fact.
And this is business at the end of the day. Yeah. Like, you know, I try to coach all my buyers. Think business. I don't care if you're going to live there. I don't care about any of that stuff. Men lie, women lie, numbers don't at the end of the day. And if you're telling me your goals are to invest in real estate, then you need to think like an investor. Every first-time home buyer should be thinking like an investor. Why go buy the flip? Why? When there's programs out there for the first-time home buyer, like a FHA 203K loan or Fannie Mae home style loan, where you can get renovation and your mortgage money all in one loan.
Thing, yeah.
So why not go and buy? Look, we spoke about Envy and Caesar. These guys are not buying the flip, right?
Yeah.
They're going ahead and they're buying at the foreclosure auctions. They're buying short sales. They're buying the worst house in the best areas that they can. And they're putting that money into it. And now they're making their ROI. Why can't every first-time home buyer think the same way like the investor? Why does the Envy's and the Caesars of the world need to make all the money? Why can't the first-time home buyer have that same strategy and make the same returns, but you're going to live in it for a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever the case may be. But now you're buying under market.
Yeah.
That's the whole.
So you would encourage anybody to go into buying a home as an investment, like even if somebody doesn't necessarily look at themselves as a real estate investor. Mm-hmm. I guess they are a real estate investor by buying a home. You're investing. Whether you think you're investing or not, you're investing.
Yeah, you're investing or not. So some people will tell you out there that your primary residence or a single family home is not an investment because it doesn't generate cash flow, right? Which is true, but to me, I don't think that's 100% true because you're looking at that equity, right? That equity is what that first time home buyer should be paying attention to. And when that equity gets to a certain position, you need to act on it. You need to do something with it because equity is monopoly money. It's not guaranteed. The market crashed 12 years ago, right? Yeah. When every home was depreciating across America. So if that doesn't tell people that equity is monopoly money, I don't know what's going to tell them. So I have people right now that may purchase a home in 2011, 2012. Now they may have $200,000, $300,000 in equity and they don't want to touch it. I'm like, what are you doing? You need to take that money and do something with it because if the market corrects itself, which it will at some point, now you're going to kick yourself that you didn't jump in the game, take that money to invest in these opportunity zones, right? And build that generational wealth for yourself. Because the market doesn't care about what's going on. The market is going to do what the market wants to do. So what I try to coach all my buyers, my sellers, my current homeowners, whoever, don't let equity sit there because it's not guaranteed. You got to use it. If you don't use it, then it's nothing. Yeah. It's monopoly money.
That's real.
That's a fact. Yeah,
I'm sitting here thinking like, okay.
The single family home is great. I don't have nothing against the single family home. But I think the strategy moving forward should be multifamily first, single families later down the road. Because you can always buy a single family home. There's never going to be a shortage of that. Mm. Look what's happening. Housing is expensive. Rents are going up. The rental market is booming right now. So why not put yourself in that position to be a owner-occupied landlord where you can basically live for free, now have your job, now you can save all that money to reinvest into other real estate.
I think it goes back to what our guest last week talked about as far as a lot of times we care about how we're perceived.
Exactly.
And it's like, okay, well, how would I look living in a three-family home? I'd rather have the white picket fence with the backyard and all that. Well,
with the Mercedes outside.
Exactly. But Mercedes like you said, when you look at it from a financial standpoint, it
makes a lot of
from
sense.
A lot of different reasons, it does make sense.
Oh, absolutely. And to piggyback off of episode 11, which was a phenomenal, 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 phenomenal episode.
Appreciate that.
So if you guys haven't watched episode 11, you need to watch that before you watch this. Right? And watch all the other 10 too. But episode 11 was fire, right? So what he brought up a great point, right? Mixed-use properties, which mixed-use properties are common where we are in New York. Mm-hmm. You can use FHA loan to purchase a mixed-use property, which a lot of people don't know, and put down 3.5%, as long as 51% of that mixed-use is residential. So you can go ahead and buy that mixed-use that may have a storefront but two apartments or three apartments as residential. Yeah. And now if you're a business owner, if you're, like he said, he runs a restaurant. Now he can live in that one of the units, have the restaurant, and still have two rental incomes coming in to help support everything. Now living for free, his business is for free, and the mortgage is being paid off. Yep. And you can use the 203K loan to renovate it. So you can go buy the piece of shit, mixed-use property, and use that renovation monies to fix it up, clean it up, and open up a business or rent it out to another business owner, the commercial aspect of it. And now commercial rents are much higher than residential rents. So, again, living it for 1 year, now you move out. Now you have a commercial property, all under 3.5% on under an FHA loan with 3.5% down, plus your closing costs.
You gotta know the game, man.
You gotta know the game. It's all about strategy. And most people, especially, listen, we're in the age of the business owner, the entrepreneur, right? Most people don't think you still need a brick and mortar, but some businesses you need a brick and mortar. Right, depending on if you're in a service industry or whatever the case may be, if you're in retail, if you want to open up a store, a restaurant, like you said, it's one of the toughest businesses because the overhead, right, and rent is a big thing. But if you have a mixed-use property and you want to open up a restaurant, why not use that as your primary residence also for at least 12 months? For that 12-month sacrifice.
You can get the loan,
Get the loan, live in it because you always can move out, and now you have a business that's basically in there for free.
And a new rental property because you left.
And rental property. So you get, you know, you're killing two birds with one stone, so to speak. You get rental and your business in there. And your business is not going to have all that overhead. of the pressure of paying the rent, because you know what? It's your mortgage and your tenants are paying for it upstairs.
Yeah, man.
So it's all about strategy. Okay.
Right. So now we're going, it's not all good in real estate. It's never always.
It's a dangerous game, man.
So now we're going to explain how things can go wrong. All right. So as I said, it's never all good in anything in life, right? Mm-hmm. So real estate is something that's very popular, very trendy right Absolutely. Now. And it's very, it has this stigma, I think, of everybody thinks they're just going to get rich overnight, right? And people Absolutely. Don't know. It's like any business. You know, when you go into business without a plan, you're destined to fail, right? So if you plan to be a real estate investor, and as you said, whether you think you're an investor or not, if you're buying a home, you're an investor.
Correct.
But you don't have a plan in place, then you're going to, A, probably make mistakes, and worst possible case scenario, you're going to fail.
Correct.
Right? So there's do's and don'ts involved, right?
Absolutely.
Can you just talk about some do's and don'ts in the real estate game?
Yeah, there's tons of them, right? But if you're a first-time home buyer, one of the don'ts I tell people is, especially if you're in the application process, you found a house, you're in contract, don't open new debt. Don't buy your Mercedes-Benz before you go to closing. Don't change your jobs. You know, don't do something that will impact you in a negative way to turn your approval to a decline, right? And most people, you think it's common sense, right? Yeah. But common sense is not common,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, no, it's true. Right? Most people, like, they don't realize, like, when you apply for a car, they do a credit check.
Yeah.
Then they have to pull your credit. Like,
but that, what they don't realize, when you go for a car, they may pull your credit with 10 other banks to shop
right,
around to see what's the best deal for the auto finance company, not yeah. for you
yeah.
as the consumer, right?
Now that affects your credit score.
And it affects your credit score. It brings you down. I mean, I've had situations where people applied and purchased Mercedes-Benz a week before closing. Mm. I've had people who got Kohl's credit cards just because it was Kohl's bucks involved, right? and savings, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Well, I'm like, what are you doing? You couldn't wait to get the bed sheets? You didn't even close on the house yet. So you don't, what I try to tell people is this, when you're in contract, you don't own that house just because you're in contract, just because you have a loan commitment. Mm-hmm. Do not get happy. Do not make any changes that can affect you in a negative way, because you can get declined just as quick as you got approved, right? Mm-hmm. And the underwriters are always looking for a reason to decline you. So you have to be squeaky clean. Don't be moving money around. That's another big thing. Do not move money around. Keep your money in one account. Stop doing your susus and putting it here and doing this and doing that. You know what I'm saying?
Don't, that's a good one.
Don't put the mattress money in there. No. Like, leave your accounts alone, because now we start seeing money moving around. That's red flags. Now we have to document. We have to see where this money is coming from. If you can't document that money, then we can't use it, right? And that can blow up your deal too. So The don'ts is, it's just keep still. You know what I'm saying? Keep still, relax. You're almost at the closing table. And when you close, you can do whatever the hell you want to do, right? Another one of the don'ts, I would say, for first-time investors, right? Stop thinking you don't need money. You need money,
yeah.
right? If you're looking to wholesale real estate, then maybe you don't need money, right? Because you're signing contracts. But if you're looking to do buy and flips, or if you're looking to do buy and holds, you're going to need capital, right? There's many ways you can get capital. I mean, you spoke about it at my workshop. You can do self-directed IRAs. You can borrow from your 401k. You mm-hmm. can raise capital with a group of friends. What I'm starting to see right now is becoming more popular, where people are co-owning properties together.
Mm.
You know, moving into multifamily.
Working together.
You know, yeah. a lot of different cultures co-own. Right, but
can you talk about that? Because yeah, collaboration, because yeah. I'm talking about collaboration in business.
Absolutely.
Actually, last week, so now, but collaboration in real estate.
Yeah.
Something that is very key, very important. Leverage. Can you just talk
yeah.
about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Collaboration is greater than competition. I speak about this often. That's why we're here right now,
yeah.
because we're collaborating, because it doesn't make sense to compete when we all have something we could bring to the table. So if you're a first-time home buyer, let's just say your brother is a first-time home buyer, and you both want to be in that same area, why go buy two single families? Why not go buy a four family together? Live on each floor, and now you have two rental incomes, and now you both can probably live for free or pay minimum together. Now you can split that equity when it's time to sell or buy each other out. When real estate investing, you don't need to be 100% owner. I think that's the biggest misconception that mm-hmm. people think. Like, if you're going, we all can, we can collaborate and create a business structure, a joint venture business structure, and put our money up. And it doesn't have to be equal, right?
Yeah.
As long as it equals to 100%, at the end of the day, that's all that matters. You can be 80% owner, and we can both have 10% ownership, right? Because we bring in something to the table.
Yeah.
But that'll be our portion of the net rental income or of the proceeds after sale. 10%, 10%, 80% with you because you're bringing the capital, right?
Yeah.
But we may be the operators. And you don't know how to operate, right? So it's all a matter of what do you bring to the table to collaborate, to make yourself valuable for where someone wants to put you included into that business.
Yeah. And you said something important. You said culturally, you're not seeing that happen.
No,
and
it doesn't happen in our cultures. We have ego.
Yeah, from a client-based standpoint, like, what are you seeing out there? Like, why? What's holding us back?
We hold ourselves back. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, we want to be the top shotter. We want to be the...
This is my land.
This is mine, right? Yeah. We have that ego, that mentality, that fucking sense of entitlement that we deserve everything under the blue sun, which we do. But if you ain't working hard towards it, then why do you have this sense of entitlement for, number one? But I don't know why we don't collaborate more. It's sad that I see a lot of people in our community are not collaborating, but also on the flip side, what I'm starting to notice, the trend, especially if you look at, you know, what they call Black Twitter, Black social media, you're starting to see the uplifting. You're starting to see people coming together and starting to do more together. So I think that cycle is going to start getting broke down. From an ownership perspective, I'm starting to see family members now in our community buying homes together, you know, living in the homes together. You know, you don't need, you know, to have a 5,000 square foot home and it's just you and your girlfriend, right? Now, if you, your girlfriend, the parents can all move in, even if you want to get the single family, right?
Yeah.
You know what? We're splitting that mortgage four ways. Now it's more affordable and now we're able to save more and invest together. So I think
that, I mean, that's a personal story for me. Like, that literally is my model right now. Like, I own a home with my dad, and it's easier for us because obviously it lessens the burden on me, but it also puts me in a position that, whereas, you know, they're older in age, it's easy for me to take care of them.
Absolutely.
Rather than having them grow in age and having them put them in or having them go into a home, they're here. I can take care of them. And it works.
No, I think it's a perfect situation for you to co-own. I know someone like myself, when I purchased my first home 13, 14 years ago, I didn't want to live with nobody. You kidding me?
Right.
Fuck out of here. Nobody's going to live with me, right?
Yeah.
But now, as I've grown older and I've matured, it's more so like, you know what? That's the best way to do it because people just can't afford to live on their own no more. People are struggling. People are living paycheck to paycheck. In New York, if you're making $100K, you're broke.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see a lot more in our community where people are co-owning because people just don't have that. The resources, you know, we qualify people off your gross income, right? But you live your life off your net income. And if you make 100K gross, that's really like 55, 60,000 net.
Depending on what state, right?
Depending on taxes and what state you're in, right? But if you're talking about 35, 40%, if you're making that type of money, I mean, that's what we're qualifying off that bigger number. So for me, it's like, if you can barely qualify, you're at a max debt to income ratio of a gross income, you really can't afford it because we're not taking into consideration your auto insurance, your child care, you know, things of that nature that don't report on your credit report. So you have to be smart is what the message that I'm preaching to people now is, like, you know, be smart about this decision. And that's why I preach multifamily and investing as a primary residence versus just buying a single family home, because you really can't afford it. You know, and you're a recipe for foreclosure. God forbid you get sick. God forbid you get laid off.
Yeah.
Like, how are we going to pay your mortgage?
And then one other thing before we finish is that you had mentioned before off camera that it's important to have a strategy.
Absolutely.
Like you go from like 2 to 3 to 4. Can you just kind of explain that?
Yeah. I mean, listen, everything is strategy. No matter if it's your first time home buyer, you buy your second home, move up home, you got to have a strategy, right? For tax purposes, you need a tax strategy. That's why I speak a lot about tax strategy, insurance strategies. We've had that conversation several times. So what I try to tell people, go down, right? 4, 3, 2, 1. Because if you do it properly, you'll be able to use minimum down payments.
Four units.
4 units, 3 unit, 2 unit.
So the first home should be a four unit home.
Correct.
Then you move out of that, You get the 3-unit home.
Exactly.
You keep the
Hey, but you're keeping
it the whole time.
You're keeping the asset.
Then you go from a 3 to the 2.
Yeah.
And then now you can buy your dream home.
Now you can buy your dream home.
All those assets.
But now you got 3 other homes that's paying for
it. You
got
to think about it, right? You just accumulated probably, what's that, 7, 9 doors in a matter of a couple years. So if you're making $500 profit a door, you know, now you're a single family dream home. It's paid for.
Right.
It's really your dream home. It's not like, oh, this is what I can afford right now.
It's not what I can afford right now. Yeah. It's like we sacrificed for the first 5 years of our real estate journey, mm-hmm. right? And we went multifamilies and moved our way down. And we did it strategically. We're not sitting here buying in the best neighborhood when we're buying our multis. We're buying in areas that we can feel comfortable and safe in and live in for a year. And then we're moving out and moving into a little bit step up of a neighborhood, but going down in units. Because from an underwriting perspective, it has to make sense for you moving from one multifamily to another multifamily. You can't buy a 4-family and a 3-family on the same block and say, I'm moving from one house to another, right? That doesn't make sense.
So that's the play, like to move to a decent neighborhood and just keep moving up in neighborhoods.
Just keep moving
that's
up.
That's another thing too, parents. They're like, I want to move in the best possible neighborhood right away when my kid is like 1 years old because I went to school district, but 1 year is not going to make that big of a difference,
no,
right?
Not at all.
Kid's not going to start till 5.
Listen, the kid is not going to start till 5. I have a 4-year-old, right? She'll be 5 this year. She's going to kindergarten, right? I ask her every day, what you learn in school? And the answer changes every single day, right? Like, and then sometimes it'll have nothing to do with school. Yeah. I'm like, okay, baby, right? So you got to really think about it. Why are you going to go to that best school district? And in the best school district in our areas come with $15,000-$20,000 in property taxes, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And now with the new tax laws, you can only write off $10,000
of it. Yeah.
You can't write off the whole amount no more. So everything has to be strategy, and you have to know your tax laws, and you have to keep up with it, right? So why go to that best neighborhood if you really don't need the school district right now? Why don't you go to the okay neighborhood that you're safe in, get the multifamily, because while your child is growing, you could be growing too, but in your real estate portfolio. And now when it's time, maybe I don't even think kindergarten you need to be in the best school district. That's just my opinion. Maybe not even till they get to, you know, 6th or 7th grade is when their brains really start retaining stuff, in my opinion. Is now you probably want to go to that best school district. And then by that time, you probably accumulated, you know, 3-4 assets that now can help pay for
it's the same with, like, with people on private school. A lot of times people will send their kids to private school in like middle school because they don't want to pay the price of private school in 2nd grade.
Yeah.
So they save, and then by the time they get to like 6th grade, 7th grade, now they put their kids in private school.
Yeah. And I have folks that love private school, right, versus public. Great. But then why are you going to buy the house that comes with $15,000 in taxes?
If you're not going to send it to public.
If you're not going to send it to public, because the majority of taxes are school taxes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, why are you going to pay, out of the $15,000, probably $10,000 is going to the school. But you're still paying probably $10,000-$15,000 a year in tuition at the same time. So, and you can't write it all off no more.
Yeah.
So why do it, right? It doesn't make any sense. Even if you go with the STAR program, the STAR program is only going to save you a couple of dollars
annually. For those who don't know what the STAR program
is. The STAR program saves you on school taxes,
right?
It used to come off the gross on your taxes. Now they send you a check at the end of the year. So it doesn't really help you during the course of the year. You get reimbursed. Yeah. Or refunded, that's savings, but that's savings is only like $2,000. So I mean, $2,000 versus $15,000, it's like pennies on a dollar. When you it's a penny saved is a penny earned too. Yeah. At the same time, but it doesn't really help you in the grand scheme of things. So what I try to tell people is, listen, just be smart, because you got to pay that mortgage every month, and the mortgage man don't care. They want their money, and if they don't get your money, they're going to wind up foreclosing on you at some point. So just be smart. Move a strategy. Start with rental properties first, because the rental properties can pay for your asset. Like DJ Envy and Caesar both say at their seminars, right, which I love that they say it. You know, Envy's flashy. Like, he loves his cars, right? We all know that if you follow him.
Yeah.
He's always buying some Rolls Royce or something. But he said flat out, I don't buy this unless I have an asset that can pay for it.
Mm.
So I'm not paying for it. I'm paying for the asset.
Assets over liabilities.
Assets over liabilities, right? Shameless plug, right? Assets over liabilities, people, right? But he's buying the asset to pay for the Rolls Royce. You know, we have that same opportunity. You know, these guys are part of the 1% club. great. We all have that ability to do the same thing. Even if we're not part of the 1%, we can develop the 1% mentality.
Yeah, mindset.
That's all we need. So that's when you ask me, where do we first start? Right here.
Yeah.
The mentality is the first place that we need to start. Develop that 1% mentality. Develop a strong team. Develop your 1% dream team. You know, you need guys like me. You need guys like Rashad. You need financial planning. You need to understand tax planning. You need all of these key team players to guide you to know your overall strategy. Because if you just go to, in my business, what I like to call them order takers, you know, it's like going to McDonald's. You want fries with that, right? Mm-hmm. If you go to a regular loan officer, they're not asking you questions. They're just thinking to get you pre-approved today to buy that house today. But they're not trying to gather the long-term, your long-term goals. So when someone comes to me, I'm asking these questions because I want to know who are you, number one, and what do you want to do with your life? Because if you tell me, hey, I want to buy this house, but then at the same time, you say I want to invest, well, you're contradicting yourself.
Mm.
You got to kind of pick your poison and figure out what's the best route. And I can only tell you my opinion, my advice. This is what you qualify for. I'm going to lead you to the water, but it's up to you to drink at the end of the day.
Now, we want to thank you for coming in, man. That was, I hope you guys really... Once again, took Cheers. Notes. Yeah, I hope you guys really took notes because this is just like business. You know, real estate is something. This is actually probably even more relevant than business because everybody doesn't aspire to be a business owner. Most people have a dream of owning a home, right? Or, you know, at least rent. You got to live somewhere regardless. So even if you're a renter, you should still be educated on it because, you know, real estate is something that everybody partakes in one way or the other.
Even I'm going to cut you off, but even if you're a renter, you still should be buying.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, why? And especially with the millennials, like I hear a lot of this online. Millennials don't want to buy homes. They just want to rent because they don't feel like they want to get tied down to a property. But why not still invest? You know, still buy property, still buy real estate. And you can, because there's nothing wrong with renting. You know, there's a lot of people in my industry that try to say compare rent versus owning, which I get the logic, but there's nothing wrong with being a renter, right? It's a purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, some people, you have to be mature to handle home ownership.
That's a fact.
You know,
it's a lot that goes into it.
It's a lot of responsibility.
Absolutely.
It's not just like, oh, I bought a house and I'm a homeowner and great, but the goddamn boiler break, then what?
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's a lot of responsibility. It takes a certain level of maturity to handle home ownership. So if you're not mature enough and you need to rent, why not start investing into real estate and start small? Stay in your lane. You don't have to keep up with, you know, the superstar investors that are out there buying 10 properties a week. You know, stay in your lane. Whether you buy one home a year or one a month, whatever your lane is, stay in it.
Stay in your
lane.
That's
a fact. But yeah, so once again, thank you for coming. And also, it's important to, as you said, I like what you said as far as putting together a team and just having resources. A lot of times we feel like we want to do everything ourselves. And like me, I'm a big proponent. Like, I stay in my lane, right? So I'm a financial advisor. I talk about finance, but I don't talk about everything to do with finance.
Yeah.
So that's why we brought you in to talk about real estate. That's why we bring, you know, tax advisors in to talk about tax. That's why we bring a lawyer in to talk about legal issues because I don't do that for a living. So I'd rather have somebody that does it every single day to talk about it as opposed to me just trying to cover everything or Troy just trying to cover everything. Networking is important and having knowledgeable people. So can you tell the people how to contact you?
Listen, on YouTube, MG the Mortgage Guy. On Instagram, MattG_HomeLoans. Catch me there or Facebook or LinkedIn. Just my name, Matthew Garland, Matthew with 2 T's. But if you have any questions or concern, you can shoot me a DM on Instagram. I try to respond to all the DMs. Or you can catch me on one of these dates with DJ Envy and Caesar on their real estate seminars. But I'm around, man. Just holler at me and let's work.
I appreciate it. Troy, anything you want to add?
Well, I'm going to end where we started. Just a quote from Nip the Great. He said, you can have it all, it's all about your reason. And through his music and through his life and through his work in his community, he was living out his reason. It's really his purpose. And a lot of people try to figure out, how do I find my purpose? And the best way is to live through experiences and, you know, find something that you're really passionate about or that you do well, that you never had to go to school for. You just naturally do it and find a message in there, man. So you can have it all. It's just about the reason, man. So make sure that y'all know what the reason you're doing it for. And one of his biggest things that he was doing was just spreading love for everybody else's benefit.
Absolutely.
And like I said, it's unfortunate that he lost his life, but he was living his purpose. And the more people we can get to find and chase their purpose and live in their purpose, you know, the better our communities would be, the better the world would be. So we lost not only a pillar to our community, but a pillar to the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah, rest in peace, Nipsey.
Rest in peace, Nipsey.
Before we leave, also, my book tip for this week is a book called The Wake Up Call by my guy Ash Cash. And that is, he does an interesting thing where he, yeah.
He's dope.
Yeah, yeah. He breaks down like financial topics. It's kind of similar to what we do in pop culture. So that book is based around Jay-Z's album 444. And he like kind of goes into detail of like what Jay-Z's rapping about and then explains like, okay, this is the real estate play behind the lyric and stuff like that.
I think he has something coming out with Nipsey.
With Nipsey, I saw that today. Yeah,
shout out to him.
Yeah.
Shout out to Ash Cash.
Yeah, we got to get him on the show as well. So definitely. Shout out to Ash Cash. And yes, guys, don't forget the merch, Troy. It has the signature assets over liabilities shirt.
I need this in black, Troy.
It's done.
We got the cream shirt. You got the cream joint.
I got the cream joint.
Okay, credit rules everything around me. That's the age we're in now. Okay. Before it was cash rules everything around me. Yeah, now it's credit rules everything around me.
I like that.
We got that. We got the crop top hoodies for the ladies.
Yeah, the dad hats is moving right now.
Dad hats. And also our Patreon as well. Like I said, Patreon, that's a way to support us financially, support the podcast financially, so we can keep bringing people on. We can expand the podcast. We can travel. And we can give you guys education on a weekly basis. So, yes, thank you for your support. And we will see you guys next week. Peace.
Love y'all.
All right, peace, guys. We'll be right back.